Whew. Hey guys, it is hot out there.
Oh yeah.
It sure is.
So what you doing to stay cool?
Oh, you know, I mean, I'm just kind of like taking my time, moving slowly, staying indoors.
Good tip. Yeah. I went with the drink lots of fluids. I've been drinking like a gallon of Gatorade every hour, just in case.
Solid plan. Mm-hmm. What about you, John?
I'm not actually feeling the heat.
How is that possible?
Well, I've been meditating.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, I'm drawing attention to my inner space as opposed to the outer world. I'm focusing on thoughts, deep, profound thoughts, like Wisconsin's governors, past and present, and how their actions impact the world like ripples in a pond.
That actually sounds better than drinking all this Gatorade.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. We should get in on this.
Can you teach us how to meditate, John?
Yes, my children.
Great. Well, this is the WPR Politics Podcast.
Slower.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
I'm Laurel White.
And I'm John K. Wilson. This week, let's meditate on the news. Well, guys, to begin our journey, why don't we think about Wisconsin's current governor, Tony Evers, and how he and his administration made news this week regarding transportation?
It seems like a good place to start our journey.
And yeah, I'm going to take a mindful breath.
Good call.
Before I tell you about the news conference that started all of this. I should do more mindful breathing in news conferences.
I wouldn't say that the news conference started all this.
I would.
I wouldn't.
Fight.
This is not meditative. No, what started all this was a budget. A budget
started
all this.
Yeah, I suppose if you're going to be technical about it. Okay, so the budget, you want to explain your argument?
Yeah, in 1931, Wisconsin moved to an executive. No, the budget, okay, I'm trying not to get too excited because it warms me up. Mm-hmm. The budget included road funding, including some specific local road funding that Republican lawmakers had kind of earmarked.
Yeah.
Or said like a certain percentage would go, or a certain dollar amount would go to town roads and a certain amount would go to counties.
Mm-hmm.
They had decided how they were going to parcel out this section of road funding. And then the budget got back to Governor Tony Evers and he used his powerful veto pen to change that. Right, Laurel?
Okay, so I see where you're going with this.
Ripples in a pond, dude.
Ripples in a pond. So basically what happened here is that in the budget that passed the legislature, there was like that $90 million that you're talking about that had been divided into three different pots. This was a one-time bit of money for local governments. It was divided into counties, cities, towns, villages, things like that, in addition to a 10% increase for local transportation aides. This is kind of like a separate little one-time bit of money. The governor decided that he didn't like the way that the legislature had kind of treated this one-time pot of money. He said, I don't like all the earmarks saying that this much needs to go to towns, this much needs to go to counties, this needs to go to villages, and I don't really like that it's $90 million. I want to make it $75 million, and I want to take away all of the requirements for where this goes to. I'm just going to give it to the Department of Transportation and tell them, you guys can decide how you want to spend this money.
Which led to a news conference.
There we go.
Yeah. So the news conference was DOT rolling out what they were going to do with this $75 million pot of money that the governor had said, like, do with this what you will.
Do with this what you willeth?
Do with what the... How would you do this?
Do with all, man. People are saying these things in news conferences now. It makes no sense.
And basically what the DOT said is they were going to create, or that they have created, a grant program to allow these communities to apply for money for transportation projects and then have it either approved or not approved, as grant processes tend to work, and kind of dole out the money that way. Now, I think an interesting thing to note about this grant program is that it kind of widens the net for what the money can be spent on. The money that the legislature had allocated originally was under this one-time funding, of course, but it was for the local road improvement program. So just roads, right? The grant program would be eligible, or projects would be eligible under the grant program for things that are like beyond roads. It could be public transit, bike paths, pedestrian walkways, harbor improvements, pretty much anything that's like under the umbrella of transit that these communities want to do.
And this didn't rub everybody the right way exactly, right?
Yeah. So kind of, I think what happened here, and not to get like too into the weeds really about like the evolution of the news process per se, but we were at the news conference, and one of the reporters at the news conference asked kind of just more details about how this grant program would be run and what sort of projects would be eligible. And someone asked, so for example, could the money be used for the Milwaukee streetcar? Is mm-hmm. that something that would be eligible under this grant, that Milwaukee could apply for that? The Department of Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson said, yeah, that's something that would be eligible if they applied and it was approved. That could certainly happen. So this reporter tweeted this, and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald saw that tweet and tweeted in response, as people do in the world of Twitter, and said,
"Oh, is that how Twitter works?"
Yeah, yeah. You should check it out sometime.
No.
And he said that he's not happy with it. I can't remember what were his exact words. It was like, "This is a."
I have his tweet here, and Senator Scott Fitzgerald said, "Quote." The governor is taking money from local road construction to fund Milwaukee's trolley to nowhere. Rural Dems should push back. Veto override! Exclamation point.
So
that was a little. That was not very meditative of me.
Yeah, well, it's not a very meditative mellow, tweet.
I'm sorry. Look, there is an exclamation point at the end of that tweet. So nothing I could do really.
I mean, the Senate Majority Leader is like, pardon my like cheesy metaphor, but he's turning up the heat there, calling for the veto override.
Yeah, this went from zero to veto override in like 10 seconds here.
It did go pretty fast. Like, wait, we were talking about a transportation. Wait, hold on.
So this is, I mean, I think to kind of put it in context of the evolution of like the senator's perspective on the budget, this is the same guy who said after the governor released his vetoes, like that they didn't make substantial changes to the Republican budget. Like overall, he was okay with the governor's vetoes, but this program has kind of not changed exactly what happened, but sort of like fleshed out the effect of the veto. So the governor's veto gave DOT this money to kind of do with as they will, kind of set this up so it could happen. And the senator is obviously not pleased with the structure that DOT is putting in place that could, you know, send money to transit projects in places like Milwaukee instead of just road projects.
So I have a question for you, to which I know the answer. Have you guys ever covered a veto override attempt in Wisconsin?
Maybe.
Maybe.
You don't know.
Maybe in a past life.
Okay. That's true. We are having a meditation episode, so maybe you did. Maybe you did. Okay, the correct answer is no, you haven't, because the Republican-controlled legislature never tried to override Governor Scott Walker.
Tell us, old man Sean Johnson, is a veto override process like?
The thrice
so
old.
Mean.
Sorry, buddy.
I'm sweating bullets now. This is not working for me.
So the veto override, it requires a 2/3 vote of the legislature, right?
Yeah, so it would be very hard to pull off a veto override. And so, practically speaking, it's not done very often because it's hard to get those kinds of numbers. But politically speaking, too, Republicans never tried to override Governor Walker because it would have been seen as like kind of a slap in the face to their own governor. Mm-hmm. They don't want to embarrass him by trying to override the governor. But when Jim Doyle was governor, and Republicans ran the legislature, they tried to override him quite often. Like, it was a fairly regular political scene to have them pass something and the governor veto something, and they would say, "Hey, we're gonna not only put you on the spot, Governor Doyle, we're gonna put some Democratic lawmakers on the spot to try to get them to go with us on this override.
Mm-hmm.
So like with Doyle, he vetoed concealed carry, which is now law in Wisconsin. But back then it wasn't. Republicans were always trying to pass this. Doyle would veto it. And there would be some Democratic lawmakers from rural districts who'd be put in a tough spot. Do you go with your governor or do you go for this bill that you actually support? And mm-hmm. in those situations, they went with Governor Doyle. You know, they did not vote to override their governor. So here, Fitz is saying to Democrats, really, this mm-hmm. is, they're
I
not
mean,
going.
Yeah, he says it right in his tweet.
He
like,
does.
Rural Democrats, you should side with us here and override your governor because don't you want nice, pretty new roads in your rural districts?
Because we know, obviously, Republicans have majorities in both chambers, but they don't have the two-thirds vote that they need. They would need Democrats.
And they're not, practically speaking, we know they're not going to get Democratic votes mm-hmm. in all likelihood, but they could get Democrats on the record voting no on mm-hmm. this. And then they're going to frame it as voting no against your local roads and in favor of this Milwaukee, he called it the trolley to nowhere. I think they've thought about this one
they've,
a little
they've
bit,
called
right?
it the trolley to nowhere before, I think.
Yeah.
I think, just to point out, like, this grant program could be used for road projects.
Yeah, there is
if
a chance that
if communities want to apply for road projects, that would still be eligible.
There is a chance that the streetcar could get no funding out of this,
right,
too.
Milwaukee
we
could apply and they
that
don't.
They're going to apply for it.
Right.
Right.
But they're going to frame it this way politically anyway. And mm-hmm. so Senator Fitzgerald is saying, hey, Senator, you might as well just say, like, Patty Shockner, how are you going to vote for this? Because that's, like, the type of lawmaker in a competitive district that he's really focusing on here with this veto override attempt.
And I think we should point out, too, that it's not just Senator Fitzgerald, but Speaker Voss has gotten on this veto override train, too, which is obviously
this
a necessary.
Veto override trolley?
Yep, the
veto.
It's not a trolley
to
nowhere. It's a trolley to override town. I'm going to find the speaker's quote. Quote, it's simply ludicrous that the governor would turn his back on Wisconsin drivers everywhere and allow these local road grants to go to projects like the Milwaukee streetcar. We're seriously considering a veto override.
And I think maybe there's a benefit for Republicans to talking about this topic that goes beyond putting Democrats on the spot. And that is that their base loves to trash the Milwaukee streetcar. Like mm-hmm. pretty much no other topic. They love to beat up on the streetcar in Milwaukee, especially in southeast Wisconsin. If you want to rev up that base, this is one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't just say like Milwaukee road projects. They said the Milwaukee streetcar.
Specifically. I mean, there's obviously there a lot of dialogue about the breakdown of state funding in general and how much goes to Milwaukee and how much Milwaukee should get versus rural parts of the state and sort of how neglected have rural parts of the state been in the state budget process. So this is something that is not an unfamiliar topic to state lawmakers, but this kind of trolley is a, what do you call that when something is a, I'm making a great gesture right now. It's like a scapegoat.
Yeah. I was going to say symbolic, but I guess
yeah, there
yeah,
you
I
go.
See what you were saying.
A symbolic goat.
Because remember, a symbolic goat. Because this, you know, this budget, the other thing is it does is they're trying to say like, hey, Governor Evers, you said you're going to fix the roads. I mean, Governor Evers' budget puts more transportation revenue into roads than any budget in like, well, you know, more than a decade. So there's a lot of money going toward roads, but finding that symbolic goat can sometimes go a long way toward, I don't know, making your message land with the public instead of just showing them revenue numbers.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important to note that this like $75 million pot of money and grant fund is just one small part of the transportation budget. Like we've got that almost $400 million in new revenue that's coming in through the title and registration fee increases. We've got a 10% increase across the board to local road aids. I mean, this is really just one small piece of road funding in Wisconsin.
So how you guys feeling? Nice and calm, relaxed, cool?
Yeah, I'm actually speaking slowly so as to follow along with your meditative teachings.
Well, to take things to the next level of enlightenment, let's step back in time and talk about another of Wisconsin's governors, former Governor Scott Walker.
Former Governor Scott Walker, soon to be president of the Young Americas Foundation, you mean, right?
Or as they call it internally, YAF.
Right, YAF.
Yeah, and this is particularly interesting, not just because, you know, the former governor of Wisconsin doing something new and different, but it sort of says something about the potential for him to run for office in 2022, which is something people in Wisconsin are kind of keeping an eye on. The governor hadn't ruled that out, running for governor again or even U.S. Senate.
Yeah, here's the ripples of the pond, is that you don't have Scott Walker, who is going to be this kind of historical figure in Wisconsin, especially among Republicans, mm-hmm. running in a Republican primary in 2022. And he could have run for governor or U.S. Senate. And he kept the door open to running for either governor or U.S. Senate because U.S. Senator Ron Johnson had not said what he was going to do. And Ron Johnson, remember, had previously said he only wanted to serve two terms in the U.S. Senate.
So which would be ending in 2022.
Which would be it, right. And so if Ron Johnson is going to follow through on that pledge and term limit himself, Scott Walker could run for Senate for Republicans, and you know, who's going to stop him? He would certainly be a formidable primary opponent. So if Scott Walker's not in, that kind of opens the door to, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen, because Ron Johnson is now saying, I might run for Senate, I might run for governor, I might not run for anything. Mm-hmm. Like, Ron Johnson is keeping all those doors open. And now, you know, we still don't know what's going to happen with the party. I think Johnson's decision will set off like a bunch of ripples in the pond.
But I think that's like the third or fourth time you've said that so far. This is really sticking with you, isn't it?
This is your talking point. Ripples in the pond. That's what you want people to take away from this podcast.
I'm just trying to cool down, guys. And Johnson's at work.
Picturing ponds.
It's super warm, and if I just keep saying it, maybe this will work.
I think we should mention that when the governor announced that this was his new job, he said that he had made a commitment to be there for a certain amount of time. And so that's why the 2022 thing is out of the question, because it would... that time period that he said he was committed to this new job would be through then.
And he's not actually starting the job until 2021, though.
Right.
Yeah. And some people have said, okay, look, Scott Walker has said before he's not going to run for an office and then has run for an office. Mm-hmm. So in 2014, he's running for re-election, and he says, you know, it's my intention to be governor for 4 years. And then, you know, runs for president like right after he wins election as governor. But Walker told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, quote, "This would preclude me from running for governor in this next cycle or running for the U.S. Senate if Ron Johnson's seat is open." That's pretty explicit. And then if his new job doesn't start until 2021, the race for governor and U.S. Senate is going to be kind of underway by then. It would be unlike Walker to get a late start in one of those races. I mean, he's somebody who just is always running when he has done it in the past.
And it's not just Young Americans Foundation, too. He also got appointed to a prestigious board by President Trump this week.
Yeah, both in the same week. And this is, I guess, now that he's going to be living, he's going to have a residence in the Washington, D.C. area, he said. And now that he's doing that, he has an opportunity to serve on boards out there. So he was appointed by President Trump to the Board of Trustees of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in the Smithsonian Institution. So it's sort of interesting you have Walker being on this board for this former Democratic president. It's a nonpartisan position, though, officially. So Walker tells the Associated Press that former Wilson Center board chair Fred Malik was a friend, and he introduced him to the board, and that Walker became a fan. So that's one plausible explanation of why he would be going on this board.
Has kind of a personal connection. Yeah.
So I think I found another explanation mm-hmm. for both of his career moves this week, guys.
Yeah.
So what could be another thing that the governor finds appealing about working for this Wilson Center?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did some investigating, and I found out that their address is at, let's see, 1 Woodrow Wilson Plaza. But where would that be? Oh, it would be at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center, guys. There's a Ronald Reagan connection here.
Oh, all right, well.
And furthermore, this YAF organization that he is going to be, you know what they own? They own Ronald Reagan's ranch, guys. They own the place where Ronald Reagan had a ranch.
And so
they
get, many Reagan connections.
They, and like they can hang out there. And you, so Scott Walker could just go to the ranch whenever he wants.
That sounds cool.
Scott Walker.
Put on a jean jacket and do some bill signing reenacting.
I got to think he actually is aware of this because Scott Walker often points out that his wedding anniversary is on Ronald Reagan's birthday. He's a big Reagan fan, and I think maybe the Reagan tie-in.
I like this. These are fun facts, Sean.
Yeah. I saved those up for the podcast. They don't have any place in actual news, but we'll put them at the end of this podcast here.
Well, it's all coming together cosmically, like ripples in a pond.
If you say so.
You're the expert.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you're looking to attain true, lasting inner peace and escape the cycle of karma and suffering, there's only one simple thing you have to do. Subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts. You'll get one almost every single week. You can also find the show on Google Play and on Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on past episodes anytime by going to wpr.org/politics.